it's important to acknowledge the fact that it's not impossible that we do these deals day in and day out, and it's just guiding both parties through what's required. And whether it's Amazon or e-commerce, there's definitely ways to get around it and seek more information about what needs to get done.
Hi, I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and one member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. If you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, just go to theamazonmastermind.com. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce brand owners. Today, we're talking to Benny Gould of Flippa. Flippa is one of the biggest and best known M&A sites online for digital assets or digital businesses. And Benny Gould is the global head of advisory at Flippa, which is, as they say, the number one platform to buy and sell online businesses. And numerically speaking, by some margin, by what you've said. So welcome back, Benny. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. So sort of garbling through the introduction there, but we've introduced you before. So if you didn't catch it, folks, previous episode, Benny was talking about an overview of e-commerce within the sort of buying and selling of digital assets and businesses space. And it sounds like e-commerce is in good shape. So my main question was going to be, is my e-commerce business sellable in 2024? Sounds like broadly speaking it is, but we got to talk about specific businesses. So first of all, is it a good market into which to sell in 2024 at this stage of proceedings?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Michael, I believe it is. But let's go back to the main question that I think is on everyone's mind, and that is, do you know what your business is worth? And if you run an online business, you're probably wanting to know, well, what's it valued at? Like, what can I get for my business? And surprising, Michael, because, you know, we obviously have a lot of inbound flow from people that are actually considering an exit, and maybe these business owners that have been running the business and are looking to sell off for a number of reasons. But 9 times out of 10, when we do our cold outreach to business owners on Amazon or on e-commerce stores as well, we ask them that question, and many of them aren't considering an exit because they don't even know what their business is actually worth. And so firstly, it's coming up with a valuation to determine what that asset is. And we typically do this in 3 ways. And so firstly, we look at the asset itself and we put a price on what that would be worth. So if it's an Amazon FBA or an e-commerce store, we determine what assets and brand is included and product. The second is the financials and typically looking at the revenue minus expenses to determine profitability and the SKUs and everything associated with, you know, running an online business in the e-com space. And then the third is if it has any IP or anything unique that is going to add considerable value to that particular digital asset. And that comes up with a price range of what we think the business is worth. And then the final piece, Michael, is then benchmarking that against 15 years of data from buying and selling tens of thousands of digital assets on Flippa.com to give you an indication of what the market is prepared to pay.
Okay, so I guess that there's always that thing when you're selling a house that the estate agent, as we call it here, or real estate agent, if you call it that in America, comes up with the biggest price. You've got 3 or 4 people that come around, look at your house, suck their teeth, go away and give you a price. Normally the one with the biggest price tends to get the business, but that's not necessarily what it actually sells for. Are you finding, and it's a bit of a rude question to ask somebody who works for Flippa, but I got to ask it because I guess that would be the next thing that would be in my listeners' mind. Are you finding that businesses are selling for roughly the price that you originally value it at, or are they going even higher than that this year or a little bit lower? What's that sort of relationship?
Yeah, it's a great question. So this comes down to strictly due diligence. And anyone that's been through an M&A process understands what I'm talking about when I refer to due diligence. But let's use your housing analogy as an example. Are the people buying the house, have they conducted a property inspection? Do they know what's between the walls and what's between the floor? And your due diligence is the ability to dive very heavily into the business, speak to customers, understand specifically what assets are included. Of course, look at inventory, take a look at any contracts with suppliers. It's really understanding the nuts and bolts. And that's part one. Part two is negotiating the right deal and ensuring that the acquirer or the buyer is putting forward the right offer that's going to suit the seller. That is cash plus an earnout or deferred payments structure. You know, we're seeing a lot of seller financing come through. We're seeing a lot of lending questions come through around being able to borrow. And of course, that is certainly an option, but cash is always king. And most certainly deal structures are critical in the deal-making process. And finally, the legal aspect is key. So ensuring the contract or contract of sale, I should say, is tight and is reflective of the earnout that the business owner is seeking to get as a result. So yeah, I think it's certainly, there's not a bad time to sell. I think people navigate around profit multiples as the main anchor as to what a good deal looks like, but it's not necessarily the mechanics of what a fantastic deal can be. And we see creative deal structures being built by our team and deployed. And ultimately, the right deal structures that have that creativity are built around great products or great businesses that have been run by business owners. And those are largely partnerships where the acquirers are working with that business owner for a period of time until it's time to leave and exit fully.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about that. There's a few different parts to this here. I mean, so first of all, deal structure. What is a typical kind of deal structure? Because I suppose that most people don't think about the fact that you don't just go in, plonk down, say if a business is listed for $500,000 and a lot of them are listed in dollars, you don't just go in and plonk down $500,000 in cash necessarily. I'm sure that the seller would be extremely happy if that happened, and I'm sure it does happen, but that's not always the case, is it? So what are the sort of typical deal structures that you would see?
Yeah, well, it depends on the type of acquirer. So, you know, the first question we ask any acquirer signing up to Flipper is, have you purchased a business before? And if they have not purchased a business before, it's likely that they're going to lend to financing options or start relatively small to get their foot in the market. Of course, if they've gone through an acquisition before, they're going to have a lot more experience. They likely are going to have capital, secure capital as well, which is important, and have the funds ready to deploy. And that's really critical at the entry point. If you're an Amazon business owner or an e-commerce business owner and you're going through the exit process, you want to know that the acquirer has been through the process before and that you're going into it with as much risk or less risk as possible. And so then you're starting to see a little bit more maturity in the deal structures. So when someone who has purchased a business before, they've gone through preliminary due diligence, it doesn't take them too long to look at the Seller Central account or the back end of their Shopify account to determine the health of the business, in which then you're going to see a higher portion of cash up front if it's a quality business that is increasing revenue and increasing profitability. You also see higher cash offers when you have a more tenured business of, say, 4 years or older. You'll see that sort of lingers around the COVID time or a little longer than the COVID period. And that's where you'll see really quality offers. And then the flip side of that is, of course, acquirers that are doing this for the first time or have been through an experience before that hasn't granted them the deal. And you'll see there where there's more finance related options, lending come involved. And particularly in this market, it's almost next impossible to get a lending deal from any bank or any based on the current interest rate. So largely cash is still the prominent feature for a lot of these with an earnout or deferred component.
Okay, so it sounds like most things are going to be cash plus some kind of deferred component by the sound of it for the more experienced buyers. And it's harder to get loans. Yes, of course, particularly in the UK, we have pretty high interest rates or higher interest rates in the US as well. Obviously, that's where a lot of the buyers are, as I imagine. I mean, but sidebar though, are the buyers mostly US based or where are the buyers mostly based these days?
Yeah, definitely. At Flipper, we see 67% of our transactions are cross-border. And we did 12,000 exits last year, 12,000 deals, which is 15 times greater than the next platform doing M&A. So we have a huge volume of people going through these, and you would expect that a significant amount of them are e-commerce or Amazon assets. So a lot of them are cross-border. There is still a huge market in the United States for acquisition, but there are pockets within Europe and the UK most certainly that we see prominent players, not just in the aggregator space, but in the high net worth individual family office space. Yeah, it's very, very interesting what's transpiring in these sort of micro ecosystems in certain markets that are not necessarily getting the media attention, but have a significant amount of wealth, have a lot of experience, and are spinning up these roll-ups in specific categories and looking for, yeah, pretty much market domination in certain category areas.
It sounds like a lot of them are cross-border. So when you're selling things cross-border, what things crop up in that sort of situation? If I, for example, got a business, I'm based in the UK, I own a business that sells in the US, I want to sell to a US buyer. What sort of things does that throw up, opportunities and challenges?
Yeah, well, look, most certainly if you're UK based and you're selling to a US buyer, the same typical things come up around tax, VAT, depending on where you're selling products in certain markets in Europe, business entity, the jurisdiction of contracts, where they're stipulated in the purchase or the sales contract. Between buyer and the seller. So they're very complex in terms of cross-border deals, and really that's where the Flipper team guides both buyer and seller through that process in a most seamless way. But it's important to acknowledge the fact that it's not impossible that we do these deals day in and day out, and it's just guiding both parties through what's required. And whether it's Amazon or e-commerce, there's definitely ways to get around it and seek more information about what needs to get done.
I presume in most cases, without getting buried in the weeds, they would be asset purchases rather than share sales in most cases. Is that right? So, because it makes it a lot simpler.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Because otherwise you're buying the UK limited company, and then can you even legally be a director and blah, blah, and all that.
Correct.
Fun. Yes. And people in the UK buying US business, even more fun, because some states want you to fly over there to go and set up a company, and yeah, ridiculous thing. So, okay, but anyway, the long and the short of it is it's complex, but it's done every day by the sound of it. I mean, 67% of transactions cross-border kind of amazes me. I'm going to ask this dumb question because it so strongly comes to mind, but why aren't Americans just buying American border businesses and keeping it simple? What's your thinking about that?
Yeah, category expansion, new markets. There's some great businesses in the UK and Europe that have done very well over here that have very little penetration in the US. So have products within markets like Germany, for example, that have very, very good figures and a strong customer base, and feel that product would go exceptionally well in North America. So, yeah, it's fascinating, and to some degree, the businesses are structured differently here with the complexity and how to run an e-commerce or an Amazon shop in multiple markets rather than in one large market. So, I think it lends into some interesting M&A for those American buyers that are looking to acquire European or UK assets.
Yeah, well, I guess one thing apart from anything else is that you've got a ready-made business that you've got to go through the complexity of acquiring it, but at least you know that the business is set up to trade from day one in multiple markets, whereas getting yourself VAT registered in Germany, depending on which year it is and how many staff they've got, and can seem to take anywhere between 6 weeks and 6 months. It's quite strangely variable. So yes, there's a lot to be said for that. And also a weird thing, I don't know if you find this, but most Americans I speak to, highly intelligent, financially savvy business owners, just somehow can't get their heads around VAT. It's just an alien concept. And so similarly, sales tax for UK-based people is like, but it says $9. Why am I paying 12 at the cash register?
Sure.
We're not used to each other's cultures, are we? So I think that getting around that is helpful.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
67% cross-border transactions blows my mind. Okay. So now let's look about, assuming that you're trying to sell a business, what is it that you are... First question, what is it you're really selling when you sell a business? If you sell on Amazon, Amazon provides the sales channel. It provides the fulfillment if you use FBA.
Yes.
It provides the advertising of using Amazon ads, which even if you're running a few TikTok ads or whatever, is the majority of the converting traffic, shall we say. So what is it you're actually selling in, not in technical terms, but in a sort of practical terms?
Yeah, it's a good question. So you're selling a profitable business that is continuing to run at speed. It sounds simple, but you'd be surprised, Michael, how many businesses we list on the platform, and we need to articulate to the business owner that they've got to continue running it as they did when they were running into Christmas, right? You've got to continue selling your products. You've got to continue stock. You've really got to show that this business is worth acquiring, because as soon as some owners lose motivation, you know, tends to dip, right? And then the lack of spend or the lack of marketing or what those things, cogs in the wheel start to stop. And then all of a sudden, the valuation that was given on the way in is not the valuation that they get in the way out. So, yeah, it's really important to continue running the business at full speed and to show that it's a fantastic opportunity for any acquirer. So that's one piece of advice, I think, that we really coach them early on to ensure that all the metrics are going in the right direction.
Okay, great. That's a really, really important point. What are the other things that you would say need to be in a business to make it sellable in 2024? I mean, having a pulse kind of almost felt like it was enough in a certain place for the aggregators. That's no longer the case, I'm guessing. But what else do we need to get, you know, top dollar for the business or a good deal struck?
Yeah, look, definitely. So, I mean, you're looking at anywhere from 250,000 revenue north of that up to, you know, obviously 10 million is typically what we see at Flipper. 20% profit margin as a business, ideally coming with some intellectual property or some unique aspect around what the product category is. That's really key. Ensuring that the business articulates the monetization and how it makes money, how it acquires customers, if it is more than just one channel, and really keeping low on things like SKUs. I think what happened with a lot of the aggregators is they took on brands that probably had a lot of SKUs. And typically what we see is now acquirers are looking at businesses that are running with a lot less and a bit more specialized in certain categories. So yeah, there's a few things there, but most certainly you're acquiring the brand, you're acquiring the IP, you're acquiring the asset itself, of course, and all the structure and infrastructure, I should say, that comes with that, whether it's fulfillment on Amazon or what have you.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it's interesting to me that things have swung from you can't sell an Amazon business because it's not your business, it's on Amazon, to they're going to go like hotcakes to a sort of more balanced thing now. Because obviously the infrastructure that you're borrowing, I guess, you can borrow the sort of expertise of how to work that infrastructure, but certainly the brand, the assets, the IP, and at least you own the physical assets there as well, the inventory. So you're saying revenue range 250 to 10 million. Profit margin, you're saying about 20% plus. Is that right? That's one worth digging into.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you say, now, a lot of my clients seem to have gone through a dip from getting up to crazy profit margins under COVID to the sort of 10% net margin. Is that roughly what we're talking about, the net margin? So pre-tax profit, I'm presuming.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So is there any way of selling a business with lower margin than that, or is that just too unattractive these days?
Definitely tradable. I think it's just a competitive market. So if you have a product in the pet or baby niche, and it's trailing at a single figure net profit margin, then it's still a great product. I think you're probably still going to get some interest. There's no doubt about that. The further north you go in the profitability margin, the better chance it's going to get more interest from a wider group of acquirers. So again, you could have a 50% profit margin in the fashion space, and the likelihood of selling is very low because apparel and fashion is something that has just become less favorable, you could say, in recent times. So it really does come down to the specific type of products that you sell, and then of course how much inventory you're carrying is a little bit of a balance act of you know, how much you carry versus how much you don't, to keep the figures where they need to be during an exit process.
Okay, that's very interesting. And what's going on with apparel that is so off-putting that even with a 50% margin you'd find it hard to sell that business?
Yeah, it comes down to who's going to acquire it. So what we think about when we go through every single M&A deal is, who is the buyer? And I mean, Flipper, we're relatively lucky, Michael. We have more than 3 million members on our platform. 500,000 of those are buyers with capital liquidity of more than $150 billion. So we have no shortage of acquirers in the market. We see that there's a huge community, not only on Flipper, but out there buying brands. But every question we ask is, who is the right type of buyer for this type of business? And typically that's fashion and in apparel. There's a lot of movement more towards sustainable products, less of movement towards dropshipping and looking for local manufactured brands. And so there's a range of different themes that we're seeing from these types of industries, but it's one of the harder categories, that's for sure.
It's very interesting. So one of my clients was in baby, but in an apparel. How would that interact? This is a random question.
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old, so I can tell you the first 2 years of her life, I'd buy anything. But you know, the question begs, is it new or is it secondhand, right? And so you're seeing platforms that offer a service of buying secondhand baby clothes. And that is probably more appealing than it is going to buy something brand new, if they're going to be wearing it for 5 minutes, like my daughter. But yeah, it's just really interesting, right? And probably we all have different thoughts about what's the next hottest thing, and they will continue to happen, looking at some of the consumer trends in the United States in particular, about what categories are going to be coming up in Q2. So I think, yeah, watch this space. I think, as I said at the start of the podcast, is that e-commerce is not in a bad place. I think we're just seeing a huge difference between businesses that are successful and that have a really targeted audience, and those that don't, that came out of the COVID era for a concept overnight that made probably a decent amount of money for an audience that was largely stuck at home for a period of 2 years. And I think the brands that came out of that really successful are the ones that are going to continue to grow and we'll see come up for exits in the coming years.
Excellent. So just one more question, really, which is about the sellers, because obviously you interact a huge amount with the sellers, I guess, over the years. And what's actually driving the sale for them? I guess sometimes dollar signs, but there's presumably life events or some kind of philosophy or something else going on as well.
Yeah, Michael, it's a fantastic question. It's actually why we do what we do, right? We can talk all day about Flipper and exits and assisting, and there's no doubt that we provide value to this audience. But the reason we're in this in the first place is helping every single one of our members, one of our business owners, articulate and certainly map out their pathway to exit, to give every single business owner a chance to get there. You know, and it is democratizing the exit in order to help them send their child to college or to buy the next boat or to start the next project or take a year off. You know, it really is dependent on what they're motivated to do. And it's the first question we ask them, actually. Why do you want to exit? What's the motive? What's driving you to make this decision? Last week, we were in Bulgaria and we took a seller out for lunch who we sold his business last year for close to $700,000. And he sat there at lunch with tears in his eyes about his family and how elated they are, the fact that he could take his daughter to the school that she wanted to go to, and that he could afford to give them the lifestyle that he wanted to give them as a result of him working the hours and the long days and weeks that he had for years. And you know, both of us from Flipper had sat there and listening to this story, and we sort of teared up as well, and really coming to understand that you make a huge impact to people's lives, and this is the fundamental reason we do what we do.
Yeah, that sounds very heartwarming. I guess $700,000 is a lot of money in Bulgaria. Even now, it's not a rich place, is it? So that's a big life changing event for him.
Yeah,
and yes, I've known a few clients that they've sold their businesses, and yeah. You have got the problem of what to do afterwards if you're a really entrepreneurial person. I'd say that's a separate podcast, which I've done elsewhere. Definitely. But certainly it gives you huge options, and certainly for family life as well. It's quite amazing to be able to get that time back that you've been spending on the business. Well, look, you obviously, Flipper does a huge number of deals, incredibly powerful place to either sell or buy a business. I know you've got an exit ready handbook for people who are considering selling their businesses. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, definitely. We decided that coming into this arena, that a lot of information about exits are difficult to find on the small to medium business market. You can go to the investment banks and read all the white papers in the world, but it doesn't really explain how to position yourself as an Amazon seller or an e-commerce seller doing $500,000 of revenue a year, or even more or less. And so we decided to put together a guide on how to prepare yourself, what that looks like in getting your business in order, what the process looks like, how long the process takes, and what's really needed in order to navigate through the deal making. Of course, we're a platform, but we also have advisory service where you get a dedicated M&A advisor. And so that whole process of education is in the handbook and gives people the opportunity to understand, if the time is right, what that would look like, and particularly what's expected of them. Because an exit is a relatively complicated process, but we definitely streamline a lot of that to make it easier. But there is a lot of commitment we need from sellers as well. We need their time, we need their P&Ls, we need access to their business information so we can best position them for the exit that they're looking for.
Yeah, that's good to know. So that's, you can get that, folks, at amazingfba.com/flipper. That's FLIPPA. amazingfba.com/flipper for the Exit Ready Handbook. And I'm really a huge believer in educating yourself about this stuff. I mean, I think even if you're not going to sell your business anytime soon, or even never, even looking at it from an outside perspective, is incredibly healthy corrective to getting buried in the weeds, which, you know, owner operators just do. We all get buried in the weeds, don't we? So, Benny, it's been fantastic set of insights from the coalface, as it were, from somebody who's dealing with this stuff daily. Any question that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you?
I think we've covered it all, Michael. I really enjoyed the session, and thank you for having me along.
Thank you very much, Benny. Great to see you.
I'm Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA, and I'm the leader of the 10K Collective Mastermind. Mastermind's for private label sellers and product brand owners who sell at least $500,000 a year or more on Amazon. Over the last 5 years, we've had members triple their revenue in 1 year, grow to 8 figures, and 1 member get to a 7-figure exit. Hooray! Now we're taking it to the next level. I'm excited to introduce the 10K Collective Uber Mastermind. It's a unique combination of peer group support in person and online and specialist coaching. We give you everything you need to grow your business to high 7 figures and finally start to get that lifestyle you were promised when you went into this. You'll get clear plans from world-class specialists on things like intellectual property law, e-commerce, image and video marketing, financial engineering, and paid advertising, to name but a few. You'll create bulletproof plans to survive the recession. You'll double check with your peers that they make sense, and then you'll make a plan to make a killing on the rebound. Most importantly, you will actually transform your business. You'll create listings that convert, build a brand that connects, and get premium pricing. You'll learn the latest advertising hacks and master stock management, as well as avoiding Amazon curveballs. Above all, you will create a big, bold 3-year plan for a 7-figure exit. And unlike other programs, we don't just hype you up and then abandon you. You'll have your peers in the mastermind giving you insights from their own businesses and keeping you on track through peer accountability and a little bit of friendly competition. And we'll also have those experts double checking everything you do makes actual sense. If you finally want to start becoming the entrepreneur you've always known you can be, if you're ready to take your business to 7 figures and beyond, go to theamazonmastermind.com to find out more today.